From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, this is your SDPB News Podcast. I'm Jackson Dirks. Today we have important news on more charges brought in connection to overdose deaths within prison walls. The latest on that. We'll also look at a federal discrimination trial that's wrapping up. It's Friday, December 19th. Here are today's stories. The Attorney General's office is bringing charges for an alleged drug smuggling scheme that led to an overdose death within the state penitentiary in Sioux Falls. Attorney General Marty Jackley is bringing hefty charges to a now former state employee and an inmate in the men's penitentiary. Jackley alleges their actions led to the death of state pen inmate Travis Long Fox on November 7th. He was 33. 25-year-old Natalie Bernice Krause worked as a medical aide in the prison, and 26-year-old inmate Cole Roberts Waters, who's serving a 65-year sentence, are indicted. Jackley said the two are believed to have had a personal relationship. Jackley explains the scheme.
It is alleged that the nurse, Krause, had obtained K2, that ultimately the nurse transferred it to inmate Waters via paper.
The drug was then transferred to Long Fox. Jackley brought five total significant charges related to the scheme. In total, Krause, the prison employee, is facing 75 years in prison. Waters, facing over a century more in prison time. Both are indicted on five counts: conspiring to distribute, aiding, abetting, or advising to distribute, actually distributing, and distributing a controlled substance resulting in death. In this case, the drug distributed is K2, a synthetic cannabinoid. Jackley says K2 is hard to track within the system.
It can be placed on paper, whether that's through legal process with an attorney or a correction officer, a nurse. There's going to be an exchange of medical-related paper. That gives the opportunity.
He added, cases dealing with prisons also pose their own investigative challenges.
Oftentimes, the individuals that we are investigating are serving long sentences, and so there's less cooperation that we're able to obtain, which sometimes makes these investigations more challenging, take a little longer.
Jackley said the investigation into drugs entering the pen is not complete yet. There have been 8 overdose deaths since February. He said additional charging decisions are expected to come out publicly within 30 to 45 days. The federal discrimination trial against the Grand Gateway Hotel nears completion this week. In the courtroom Thursday, alleged discrimination victims and an Ivy League professor gave their testimony. SDPB CJ Keen reports.
The trial is connected to the alleged 2022 effort by members of the hotel's owning family, the Urys, to ban Native peoples from the property. Among the witnesses Thursday was Nick Cottier, who is the security manager with Indian Collective, the plaintiffs in the case. During Cottier's emotional testimony, the former chief of the Flandreau Police Department recounted his experience being asked to vacate the property when members of the organization attempted to book a room at the hotel. Cottier says these group members knew of the comments made by the Ury family members and wanted to see if the policy was being meaningfully enforced. During cross-examination, the defense acknowledged the written social media comments made by Connie Ury were racist, but ultimately holds the policy was never enacted beyond a Facebook post. However, cross-examination was a challenging situation, with several tense interactions between Cottier and the defense attorney and several objections from the plaintiff's legal team. David Sherwin is a professor at the Cornell University School of Hotel Management. During his expert testimony, he contends that in 2025, discrimination is rarely an explicit written policy. Further, he cites room bookings from the months following the post and emails coming from addresses located on a reservation. Ultimately, he estimated about an 85% drop in such bookings following those comments. With that in mind, Sherwin says he believes the actions of hotel management was an effective attempt at getting Native peoples to stop booking at the hotel. Defense attorneys questioned Sherwin's credentials, how much of witness dispositions he had read, and his payment as an expert witness. Sherwin himself has never owned or operated a hotel, though he has been on the ownership group of another service industry business. The trial is expected to close Friday, and the decision will be in the hands of jurors. I'm SDPB's CJ Keen in Rapid City.
The South Dakota GOP reports fewer than $100 in donations brought in on its federal filings for the third straight month. Party leadership remains hopeful, but lack of funds could impact the state convention. The state supermajority party has seen a slow end to the year in its federal count. However, the party's full financial standing isn't entirely hashed out yet. State filings should come in February. Federal Election Commission data shows at the start of December, the GOP has nearly $35,000 cash on hand. The state Democratic Party's federal account shows over $64,000 cash on hand. That has some GOP supporters worried. Jim Aschenbaum is chair of the SD GOP. He says his biggest concern is looking ahead to the coming summer and the 2026 election.
The biggest question with the convention committee is whether the convention attendees are going to have to pay for their own meals or not. If we pay for their meals, we need about $130,000 to $150,000 to make convention happen. If we make them pay for their own meals at convention, we can do convention for about $50,000 or $60,000.
Eschenbaum says he'd like to be able to fund those meals for people in attendance. He says he doesn't have an exact timeline for when that funding is needed, but estimated at least a month out so the host venue can prepare in advance. He says he's heard from other states who've had similar issues, largely because of the way donors are spending.
Fundraising is tough. I was in Miami in May for spring training, RNC spring training, and I stood up in front of that assembly, all 50 states, and I says, hey, what do you guys do to raise money for your state party? And when I asked that question, another state chairman came up to me afterwards, and they all said it sucks. Nobody wants to donate to state parties anymore. They donate to PACs, super PACs, individual candidates, you know, whatever it is. They just donate. They don't donate to the state parties like they used to.
Eschenbaum said while that's hard on the party, it does show that people are more involved with the government rather than trusting just the party. Black Hills Energy says customers should prepare for extended power outages that could last through the weekend, especially in rural areas. Extremely high winds, up to 90 and 100 miles per hour, downed power lines and damaged equipment that needs to be replaced or repaired. Officials say travel is difficult in some areas as crews attempt to access downed power lines. Crews from North Dakota, Colorado, and eastern South Dakota arrived Friday to help with the restoration. Black Hills residents are urged to use caution around downed power lines and to report any damage. Homeowners are also asked to check the service mast attached to their home. It looks like a metal tube or pipe and can be damaged in high wind. If the tube appears to be loose, bent, or damaged, homeowners should contact an electrician to schedule a repair. Rapid City's finance office hosted two informational public sessions this week about tax increment financing, or TIFs. The sessions come as voters prepare to head to the polls in January for a special election on the proposed TIF district in Northeast Rapid. Daniel Ainsley is the city's finance director. During the presentation, he addressed common questions and misconceptions about how TIFs work and how they impact property taxes.
Also, often what we hear, Rapid City makes up half the TIFs. That's not correct. Rapid City's population is about 9% of the state's. If you look at the number of active TIFs in Rapid City, we make up about 7, almost 8% of the total active TIFs in the state. So we're actually not even proportional compared to our population size within the state. We are active in using TIFs, but we're not even as active as a lot of communities throughout the state.
The Rapid City Special TIF District election is on January 20th. More information about the Finance Office's presentation can be found on sdpb.org. The state of South Dakota is receiving $100,000 in a settlement with Menards. Attorney General Marty Jackley helped secure the funds through a multi-state lawsuit. Jackley and 10 other attorneys general sued the company, claiming it deceptively marketed its merchandise credit check program. It's commonly called Menards' 11% rebate program. Among other things, the suit claimed the program falsely advertised a point-of-purchase discount when Menards only offered an in-store merchandise credit in future purchases. The settlement means Menards will make changes to its advertising and sales practices. South Dakota's share of the settlement goes to the Attorney General's Consumer Protection Division. Jackley says it'll be used for consumer education and future investigations. More details on the settlement are at sdpb.org/news. For every adult released from the South Dakota prison system in 2021, half returned to prison by 2024. That's according to the Department of Corrections annual report. A governor-appointed task force is working to lower that figure. Every fiscal year, the Department of Corrections releases a statistical report on the South Dakota prison system. One of the key numbers tracked in prison systems is the recidivism rate, the rate individuals return to prison within 3 years of release. South Dakota's 2021 adult cohort had a 50% recidivism rate, the highest in the past decade. Of those, 15% committed a new crime. The other 35% returned to a state correctional facility due to a technical parole violation. For Native American inmates, the recidivism rate is higher at 59%. Native Americans are overrepresented in South Dakota's prison system in general. 35% of men and 61% of women in state prisons are Native, despite accounting for just 10% of the state's general population. The DOC report also says non-criminal violations like parole absconding were the leading causes of recidivism in general. For the over 300 individuals reincarcerated on new sentences, drug offenses were the leading cause for both males and females. A legislative committee studying the issue discovered that since 2020, 90% of inmates assessed at intake were found to have a substance abuse disorder. While statistics can give the broader picture of the prison system's makeup, one group says it's nothing without action. A governor-appointed task force is looking at how the state can change rehabilitation efforts and lower recidivism. Representative Greg Jameson is on the Correctional Rehabilitation Task Force. At the group's December 17th meeting, he said in the past he's not considered rehabilitation a piece of what the correction system in South Dakota does.
In my mind, when I think of the DOC, I think of them as prison walls, steel doors, lock them up, keep them there so they don't get out.
But he says these discussions are different.
This whole other side of the programming and rehabilitation piece seems kind of new. At least in my mind, when I think of DOC. And what comes to my mind, paying for this going forward and planning to include it in our budget and allocate funds for it.
Jameson says the state legislature should look ahead and prepare to fund efforts if they want to see a change. Those numbers aren't available yet, but operational costs of new men's and women's prisons are expected once they're running. Some say the current programming inside the prison system is good, but not working as intended. The Council of State Governments Justice Center is a third-party consultant to the task force and is helping analyze the Department of Corrections. Sarah Friedman is with the Council of State Governments Justice Center. She told the task force they aren't starting from scratch, pointing to an inventory of programs provided by DOC.
But most of the programs that DOC administers from that have cognitive behavioral therapy bases. So I think you're starting from, it seems like you're starting from a solid foundation here. I think there are questions that I have heard from all of you as like, who is actually getting these programs? How often are they administered? How many people go through them? And those are things that I want to help you figure out as I'm doing this programming assessment over the next few months.
She added that lowering recidivism has more components to it than what happens inside prison walls. It also includes reentry into a community and the support system needed to be successful, along with the parole system. Friedman contended that's a lot for the 30-member task force to take on, but it's necessary to reach our goals.
While you really want to reduce recidivism and increase rehabilitation, if you are laser focused only on one aspect of the system in prison programming, then you're going to lose the big picture and you're not going to get the recidivism reduction numbers that you want to have, because there are more things working together to impact those long-term outcomes than just what program does a person go into prison. And that is things in prison too, like how are people supported beyond programming in prison for reentering? Like what do the kind of reentry planning and supports look like, and how are they received in the community and what's available in the community.
The Correctional Rehabilitation Task Force plans to study the issue throughout 2026. Members discussed recommending an additional group to study the state's parole system more in depth than the task force is able to. With that, the plan is to recommend meaningful legislation during the 2027 legislative session in hopes of overhauling what many deem a broken correction system. And that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, X, and YouTube at SDPB News, and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. As always, thanks for listening.